Today on CodePen Radio.
Hey everybody, CodePen Radio number 160. Fantastic. It's going to be great. It's me, Chris Coyer, co-founder of CodePen, and Marie. Hey Marie.
Hey everybody.
Yeah, we're the topic this week, as you can see in your podcatcher of choice, serverless, which is just one of those words that, I don't know, I think a lot of people get excited about, and some people have a negative visceral reaction to, in which that they are like, what are you talking about? The internet is all servers. The internet wouldn't be anything if it wasn't servers. Of course, servers are still involved. What do you think those things are in the cloud that are doing things? Those are servers. Servers. There's no, you know, which is fine. I get it. I was kind of like that. I had a bit of a visceral reaction too, meaning that, like, of course they're servers. So it just, it felt like we had an opportunity to name this thing that we're going to talk about. And what a weird name was chosen for it. That's it's just kind of a lie.
You do have to wonder how everybody landed on serverless, because it's the least true name for it possible.
Yeah.
There are still servers involved. I guess did the cloud fall out of favor? Is that
maybe
what
that's
here?
It? Because the cloud is a good word for this too. Like, there's a lot of that falls into this. For example, if you have some kind of media storage solution for your app, you know, like you're using Amazon S3 to store all your stuff, that's the cloud, you know, and that's fine. Like, it's just that word is such a joke. You know, there was like that cloud to butt plugin in browsers because there was so many like dumb articles about it that it would just replace that word. So it was a little bit easier to stomach or whatever. But that word stopped bothering me, and serverless has stopped bothering me too. Is I think when you can find a word that everybody knows what it means and it's like encompasses a movement of a sorts and it's one word long, there is some success there. Like, that's pretty cool.
So when we say serverless and when we say the cloud, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's tricky because it's a lot of stuff, right? There isn't just like, it's this. But here's let's name some parts of it, and then I'll say that all of those things together will be serverless. In my opinion, as a total serverless noob, and we use some of this at CodePen too. One of those things are called like functions as a service. So you'll see FAS sometimes, FAAS spelled out sometimes, or cloud functions. And the idea behind those is like you can write a little, and it's usually JavaScript, like Node, you can write a little function, and that function is designed to run when a URL hits it. It's like a function with a URL. And so you just hit it and then it returns some stuff. And it's like, why would you ever do that? You would do that because you need like the power of a server to do whatever it's going to do, because a backend server is going to do it more efficiently, perhaps, than JavaScript on the browser can do it, or more securely, or in a way that scales better. There's reasons to do that. So you imagine you write a little function, you know, add two numbers together, you can hit a URL with two numbers and it will return those two numbers added together. That would be the world's stupidest cloud function, because you can do that right in the browser, but you could write
sure,
that.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a big fancy weird URL that's like /add. And it, you know, I post data to it. That's the interesting part. You can hit it with those actions that we're used to, like from Ajax in JavaScript. I can say, and I can even, like in HTML, I can write an HTML form with an action attribute that points to that cloud function with the type of like post. And that function is designed to get those post values from the form. I could write a cloud function, you know, I could write some HTML that hits that cloud function and returns stuff and not write any client-side JavaScript at all and still hit my little number adder function. So it's like this hosted chunk of JavaScript that runs when a URL hits it. So what would you use that for? Well, for example, at CodePen itself, you, and I think we've probably talked about this on the podcast before, we have a lot of things, and sometimes this is sometimes referred to as microservices too, I think sometimes. We have a service, for example, that will like run pre-processing for us. So we have a little bit of like imagine we've written now a piece of JavaScript that will accept some SAS, and what it returns is CSS. So we've written a function that runs on one of these cloud functions that processes SAS for us. But now imagine we have one that processes less and one that processes Jade or a Pug, I mean, and it, all these different ones. And there, it's actually a little bit more complicated because we have like one that has is new SAS and one that's old SAS with Compass and stuff like that. And then now we're architecting. Now we have these little functions that do this stuff for us. Let's have a middleman so we could like send a bunch of data to the middleman. The middleman will talk to these other functions and they'll come back to that middle. And so we're not sending like 10 HTTP requests. We're sending one and it's splitting itself up. You can imagine like architecting an app together that are all these little bits of chunks that all kind of come back together. It's kind of a new way of thinking about building an app. And I say new, but it's probably not that new. I'm sure this is many years old, but.
Well, in the way that we're doing it, right, that's with Lambda functions, or am I mixing that up?
No, that's exactly right. In our case, right, we make pretty heavy use of Amazon Web Services has a service called Lambda, and that's what these FAS or these cloud functions are. That's what Lambda is. That's its one job in the world is these things. But that's a part of AWS as a whole, right? AWS isn't just this. AWS will host your database. It will run your web servers. It has S3 buckets. It has ElastiCache and CloudFront, and Amazon Web Services is like dozens and dozens, if not like 100, different types of services, and you piece together whatever you need to run your app. But Lambda is one of them, and Lambda is part of the serverless movement, and so is S3. I would say, you know, like you need somewhere to just store some data. Fine, that's what S3 is for. You can communicate with it through the browser or through a serverless function. So now we're piecing some things together. What about data? And I think this one is particularly interesting because it extends the front-end web developer toolkit in an interesting way that, I don't know, that it seems like I wasn't able to do before. So, you know, you can imagine, you've seen a lot of like to-do apps in your life, right? That's kind of like a hello world.
Absolutely.
Of JavaScript frameworks. And in fact, there's some repo that's like how to make a to-do app in like 90 different frameworks or something. It's like one of those Eddie Asmani projects, which is really neat. And it's meant to compare them and do performance checks on them and stuff. But okay, I'm a developer. I want to build a to-do app, but I want to build it not just for me. I want to really build a to-do app for the world. I want people to sign up for it and use it. There's two things that are going to be necessary that immediately that we're going to need to make this app work, right? We're going to need some way for people to log in, which is referred to as auth, right? And we're going to need a database because we're going to need to store the stuff that people use. There's different ways to store stuff, right? Like the browser has something like cookies. I can store data in cookies. That's a little weird, but I could. It has stuff like local storage and IndexedDB, and it has ways to store data, but just in the browser that you're visiting on. And that has all kinds of great uses. But it's not okay for something like a to-do app, because I'd expect that if I hop over to Firefox and log in, my to-dos are still there. If I open my phone and go to my to-do app, my to-dos better still be there. That's a database that needs to hold that data. And databases have been around for as long as computers have or whatever, too. They're ancient. But we've immediately jumped away from front-end development. Now we're in back-end development. That's the way we've always thought about that, is that the database stuff, that's a back-end developer job. And that's true, it is. And I'm not taking that away from anybody necessarily or whatever, but there's ways now that you can take that front-end skill set, your ability to write some JavaScript, and the fact that, you know, Node.js exists on the servers, take those same skills and totally manage a database with just yourself as a front-end developer. And so a big part of this serverless world is something like Firebase. I bet a lot of people have heard of Firebase, but if you haven't, it's like it's a toolkit that has some of the same stuff that we've talked about. For example, like a cloud function, that thing that AWS Lambda, you can do that kind of thing in Firebase too. But what Firebase is probably most famous for is stuff like its auth, for one thing. Like, I want to offer Twitter login, Facebook login, Google login on my app. Firebase can do that, and it's trivially easy, and it's amazing what it can do. So now I have auth on my app already, just because I've chosen to use Firebase on my app. And this is the kind of thing you just follow a little tutorial for. It's really not that difficult of a thing to do. And it has a database as part of it, too, and I can interact with that database just right through client-side JavaScript. And obviously, where can you write client-side JavaScript? Well, CodePen's a pretty cool place for that, isn't it?
It is a pretty good place for it.
So I could write a...
I'd say maybe the best.
Let's call it the best. So you could, I could write a to-do app that has auth, so it supports multiple users, and has a database for all those users, so people can log in and save their to-do list items. And I can write this thing in React or Vue or play around with fun client-side frameworks like that. And I could do it all in a pen. I don't need nothing.
Totally.
I don't have to. That's just amazing that I can, not only do my skills as a front-end developer help me do all that without needing to lean on a back-end developer necessarily, but I don't even need like special hosting for it necessarily. So if you're familiar, you could do it in a pen, but pens don't, they have like debug view and stuff, but there's not, pens aren't really made, at least at this moment, to kind of like be deployed as websites. Like maybe someday.
Right.
That's more of like a CodePen projects kind of thing. And CodePen projects are designed to, if you want to, when you're done, deploy them out to a URL that's just like, this is it. This is the website that I build. You can even map it to a domain name. So I could buy like chriscooltodolist.com and have my to-do list be a real website. And it's like, so I didn't buy anything there. I just signed up for Firebase and I'm using that and I'm using CodePen projects in that. But I didn't really like buy a server. So that's why serverless is kind
of... Yeah, you get to take advantage of, you know, something that's fairly inexpensive. I mean, Firebase is free to start, right? And then it's pay as you go, right?
Yeah.
As you're moving through
and
it.
And I'm not as educated as I should be on what all the costs of all this are. I mean, you get a lot of power from something like Firebase, and we only just touched on the tip of what Firebase can do there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like if it was really, really heavily used, it is going to cost you some money, just like a server would cost you money. And I'm sure there's calculations that show that like, oh, at some certain scale, Firebase isn't worth it anymore. Oh, I could do the same thing as that on my really cheap hosting over here. So, you know, there's always going to be somebody that's going to get up in your grill and be like, look, this isn't that's not the best way to do it. Let me tell you, my way is the best way to do it.
You know? You could get tangled up in that, but these types of things can let you just get going instead of spending a lot of time.
Absolutely.
You know, what do I, you know, what do I try? What do I sign up with? If you've hit a point where it's like, okay, Firebase is costing too much, it's probably because you're quite successful and you can figure out a way to, you know, make that actually work.
Right.
So
people say that about Heroku all the time. You know, it's this amazing, totally. Amazing hosting service. It's incredible what it offers to you, but it's not perfect for everybody because nothing is, you know, the way that it scales and what it costs is too hard for some apps and perfect for others. And it just kind of depends, you know?
Yeah. But this is a great way. If you have a concept in your mind where you're like, okay, you know, I have this great front end design for, like we're saying, like a to-do app, and I want to try this out. I want to see if I can make this work and see if people like it, but I want it to be real. I want them to really be able to try it. I want them to really sign up and really set some to-dos and, you know, tell me how they like it. This is the perfect way to go about that because you can just jump straight in. You don't have to spend a ton of time, you know, setting up the back end, setting up the front end even. You could take CodePen, you could take a serverless thing like Firebase and just get rocking right away. And that's what's super exciting about this.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, there was a blog article by, we worked with Kit Hodson recently about, and she put together a demo, a really comprehensive demo with all the stages and steps and how to and everything and wrote about it. And the article is How to Build a Serverless Blog on CodePen. Maybe we should get Kit on to talk about some of this stuff.
Totally. Yeah. That'd be great.
And it's great because it's just so detailed. Like, I remember when she was done with this and I was polishing up the blog post and making sure all the bits and bobs are in order, you know, which is kind of my job a lot of days. I just did the tutorial. I just did every single step of it and set it up on ours. And I was like, this is great. You know, I was able to replicate it entirely. And so what this demo is literally of a blog. So imagine we were talking about to-dos. You can imagine how the database would go. In the database, I need to be, okay, this user has this to do, and this is the text of the to do. This is the date of the to do. This is whether the to do is finished or not. This is maybe the order in which it's stored. You know, you have to think about data structures a little bit. And this is the moment in which you're like, yeah, having a little back end experience is probably not the worst thing in the world, but you know, you can usually reason your way through it. Okay. Imagine a blog. A blog needs a title and content and a date and an author and all this stuff. you can structure that up in Firebase pretty well. And so that's what this is it's basically a code pen project, or it's, you know, a lot of them are in pens when it's easier earlier in the tutorial, but it's how you can make a blog with Firebase. And it, in on purpose, it doesn't use React or Vue or anything. It's just like raw, like just plain JavaScript. And it's, I think for a lot of people are really familiar with these front end frameworks, you'd probably go right for the framework because that's what you like and you're comfortable. But it, it's nice that it's just JavaScript to prove, like, to just focus on the data part of it. And another kind of bonus that you get with Firebase is that that database, that same place that you're storing this data, happens to be real time as well. So perhaps that you have a to-do list, and the idea of the to-do list is to have it be like a co-to-do list with your family or something like that. Everybody can log into one account if you figure out a, you know, structural way to do that. And let's say I drag, you know, the fourth thing on the to-do list up to the top of the first thing on the to-do list. That'll just, you can code it up such that that will instantly happen on everybody who's looking at that to-do list to happen. It's a real-time database, so it's built to deal with features like that, which is incredible. So not only do you have these abilities, but it's cooler, it's modernized, it's, you know, the way that we expect like really fancy web apps to
work. Well, and you know, we're talking about it in terms of front end and back end skills and all that. It can kind of, you could sort of look at it as a way of like a toe into back end skills. If you have front end dev skills to start with, you can kind of approach one of these projects as a way to start learning more about how the back end works. Because, you know, even though it's not traditional back-end development as we normally think about it, it has features of that. Like you're saying, you know, you're thinking about database structures and things like that and how you're going to organize all this information. That's a step in that direction.
Absolutely. That's a great way to look at it, that you're, you know, you're using the skills you already got, but you're secretly leveling up at the same time too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you already have powerful front-end development skills and you take the plunge and, you know, turn into the full stack developer, you know, you're really, you know, improving your skill set, you're learning something new, and you may find something that you're like super into. You may discover a whole new world that's like, this is cool stuff I know how to do now and I want to do more of this. So it's very energizing to see these possibilities available to people who, I think, you know, sometimes there's a division that we have in our minds where it's like, I'm a front end dev or I'm a back end dev. It's nice because this creates kind of the hybrid situation, and you can just kind of flow back and forth between the two.
So we've talked a little bit about databases and auth and like kind of like hosting and stuff a little bit. So we're starting to build this picture of what serverless means, right? We talked about Firebase. We talked about how some of Amazon Web Services is a part of this. There's other tools here too. There's Microsoft Azure has this whole concept of cloud functions, and they have a lot of the same stuff that these other companies have. You know, once you really dig in, you'll start to figure out like, oh, I see, this company's got this and they got this. Their version of this is kind of not as good as this, but their version of this is a little better than this. It gets kind of, you know, tricky who's got what and what works. But certainly there's Google Cloud Platform and Microsoft Azure and IBM Cloud Functions. And then there's those are like big providers that we're familiar with, but there's smaller providers too that are trying to kind of get in on this world a bit. One of the aha moment kind of things I had with this is there's a site called webtask.io. And it's a little bit like CodePen itself in that you can write these serverless functions right in the browser. And so it's got an interface that's, I think, pretty nicely designed that allows you to write these functions, and it gives you the URL to hit them, and it gives you a little testing environment for the cloud function. So if you're, you know, if you've got some ideas for little cloud functions you want to write, you can have WebTask and CodePen open and be playing around with kind of both of them, which is pretty neat. It's even got a little place to store little bits of JSON data. So it's not a very complex database, but you can store a little bit of data in there if you want to. And so here's an example of using like CodePen plus WebTask was like, okay, you want to send an SMS message with a pen because your pen like just has something cool on it and you want to send a reminder. Who knows why? I made a pen that was like a recipe for oatmeal cookies. And let's say you want to send that recipe to yourself or to your friend or something. You type in your phone number, you hit the button, and it sends them the recipe, right? Twilio is great for that. It's an API system that's built just for that. They do all, SMS is a huge thing that Twilio does. And so you sign up for Twilio. It gives you API keys and stuff and some code to how you send an SMS message with Twilio. But it kind of doesn't let you or want you, at least, to do that through just client-side JavaScript, like just what you'd write on CodePen, because you have API keys that you need to protect there. So you can't just drop your API.
Yeah, you gotta keep that secret.
Yeah, because somebody's going to grab those in a minute and they're going to use it for something else. API keys unlock the kingdom there, and it's going to cost you money and it's really not safe. So a way to protect those keys is in WebTask. It's not public like CodePen is. So you can put your API keys in WebTask. They even have a special secrets bucket where you can put stuff like to feel really good about it. But now I can have my CodePen hit my WebTask URL that then sends the message through Twilio. So I have this like little circle of serverless stuff happening there. And there's little examples like this for all kinds of stuff. I want to write a Alexa skill. That's the kind of thing you need a little cloud function action for. You want to write a Slack bot kind of thing. You need some cert cloud functions and stuff for that. That's all part of the serverless world. So, and then there's like, okay, I don't know. There's just a few more things I'll toss on the bucket. Like I want a website that it needs some other functionality too. Let's say it's got some forms on it and those forms need to be processed. I might want to sell something on the website. So I need some kind of, you know, payment integration. I want my website to send an email, you know, so that needs that kind of functionality. Maybe it's there's something that really needs structured data like a CMS on it, or has real-time features, or some other feature that needs authentication. There's all these services that provide little bits and bobs and pieces of that you put together, and you can still like be only writing front-end code and have all of that functionality. So as I was like learning about this and putting the pieces together, I'm like, I should like try to, number one, I'll make my own website. So there's a website that's called thepowerofserverless.info, and the homepage of it has my little spiel on why I think this is kind of cool. Then there's another area called services, which is just this big list of hopefully you find it organized, of all these services that are little pieces of this whole serverless movement, I guess. So if you're like, oh, I need this little bits and bobs, I'll use this service and this service and this service. And if you pick all these things, the reason that we're talking about this on CodePen Radio is that you can build a pretty full-fledged thing, especially in CodePen projects, with these pieces.
I was gonna say, and there's so much to choose from. You know, you can really, I'm just browsing through the list of all the different providers and stuff, and it's just like you have so many options and approaches that you can take. And that's, it's cool to see this much choice. It's an exciting thing to check out and just realize like there's this many options to work through and check out.
So I'm going to build a blog. I'm going to build it on CodePen projects. I'm going to have a form on it, but I'm just going to use like a form keep to process the form data. I need to have auth. So maybe I'll use auth 0 to do the auth because they have some cool single sign-on stuff. And then I'll use like a database in Microsoft Azure to store the data or whatever. Like I can piece things together like that as needed. It probably, other people know more than I do about this. It probably makes sense to some degree to kind of keep some of the castles together, so that you're working within the same kind of world a little bit. But so CodePen is a great place, but there's more to this movement of all, like even older than CodePen is like something like GitHub Pages, which I bet a lot of people are aware of. GitHub Pages is like a way to flip it on for any repo, and part of that repo becomes like a hosted website, but it runs nothing. It doesn't support PHP or Python or Node.js or nothing on the back. It is just flat files only, and that makes it cheap and easy for GitHub, but it's in a sense sort of kicked off this movement, if you ask me. Like, I want to use it because it's free, but like, and it's, it has limitations and whatnot, but I want to be able to build complex stuff on it, but take advantage of that. Then there's like, oh, Amazon S3 is so cheap. Why can't I just like throw some files in a bucket and then point a URL at a bucket and have that be my website? And people do that. That's totally possible. So it's kind of given rise to this kind of idea of like static file hosting in a way. And you could think of CodePen as in that market too, because we don't run any of your backend languages. You can't do anything. It's just flat files only. And then there's things like Zite and Surge and Aerobatic that are like giving rise to this idea of they do other things. They all have, you know, even CodePen is like, what we do is we do a lot of pre-processing for you, and it all happens through the browser, and we solve specific problems for you. But GitHub Pages is, it's all works in your GitLand, so it solves different things for you. And then I think a big player in this is a company called Netlify, which I think maybe a lot of people have heard of. They're really up and coming and doing a fantastic job. They're a part of this just static files too. And they have, one of the cool things they do is like your Netlify is like a repo automatically. So like you have a Git repo and it's all your files, you push to master and it automatically goes out to Netlify. And Netlify, again, they don't run any backend, nothing for you. But they do a few other things, like they'll process your forms for you if you want. And they have like a CMS product that works in that world. And so there's all these things going on. And I think when we think of all that and just start saying, this is what serverless is, that's what serverless is.
Yeah. But you know, one thing that I was thinking of while we were, you know, talking about these flat files and things, is that one thing that traditionally a front-end developer would often need a back-end language for would be things like includes, like PHP includes.
Sure. Yeah.
And those, you know, now we have things like Pug and we have Nunjux, which are supported by CodePen projects, and those work in a very similar fashion, the way that type of thing used to work. You know, you would include a piece of a page on another page, and you can do that with Pug or Nunjux. Same way, pretty much.
You can, and that's great, and it's still a flat file. I mean, you can do that with React and Vue and stuff too. But exactly, that's a need that people have had forever, and now there's ways to solve them without needing running PHP. That kind of thing is starting to feel a bit antiquated, I think, as a whole.
Right. It's a little old fashioned. It's like, you know, except WordPress. I mean, WordPress is still gigantic, but you know, you don't necessarily have to look for a host that supports PHP. You know, if that's really all you need it for, you know, file structure within pages, that can be dealt with these new preprocessors.
Yes. Yes. It solves a big slice of the pie for people that didn't need that type of thing. And it's nothing against, I love WordPress. I like PHP. Nothing against those technologies. Yeah. These things can work together. You can still have servers and take advantage of serverless stuff. They are not mutually exclusive to each other. But like to spin up a server just because you need a PHP include just doesn't feel right anymore, because there's so many other ways to handle that in a better way. So what serverless is not is I need a pretty simple site, you know, and I'm using a lot of like front end technologies anyway. What's probably not right is to like go to Bluehost or something. And this is nothing against, I pick Bluehost because I've never used them. I have nothing good or bad to say. But when you go by, they're like what I'd consider like an old school traditional host. You go there and they have plans that start at like $3 a month. But then they have like, you know, VPS hosting that's more in like the $20-$30. And the, you know, and what you get, I've never signed up, but I just know because I just know. You sign up and you get an email that's like, congratulations, here's your server, here's how you FTP into it, here's how you manage it, here's your, if you need to add an email address, here's how you do it. It automatically has a MySQL database for you because we know you're probably going to put WordPress on it and stuff like that. And it's just like, that's not the right environment anymore if what you're trying to build is like a to-do app with Vue. It's just like, and I think more and more the world is moving that way. So that's.
Yeah. And especially, you know, when you're beginning something brand new, when you're taking a brand new product that you're building, you want to make sure that you're not paying for things you don't need. And yeah, exactly. You know, if you're signing up for a certain type of hosting that has these features that you don't need, you know, you're wasting your time
and
your money there.
Oh, look at this. It's got two cores. It's got 60 gigabyte SSD. It's got 4 gigabytes of RAM. It has unlimited bandwidth. I don't even know. I've been making websites forever. I have no idea what numbers I'm using. So but it gives you more. Like this host for $30 a month or whatever on something like Bluehost, that it's actually like not bad. It's fine. It's a server. They're giving you a good value there, but they're giving me a bunch of crap stuff that I don't need. And at the same and they're giving me both too much and too little. They're giving me too much, like, I don't know, giving me this SSD and all the, like, a bunch of gigabytes of storage that I don't need. But at the same time, they're not giving me a way to deploy. They're not giving me Git integration. Right. They're not giving me a CDN. They're not giving me HTTPS. They're not giving me any of the stuff that I really need and want, but are giving me a bunch of stuff I don't want. And that's, again, that's part of this serverless thing. People are, developers are just like, I don't want to work like that anymore. I want something easier. And so,
right. Well, you just need to get, you need to get the thing that's appropriate to your thing. I mean, it's like going into a sporting goods store or something and buying flippers when you actually needed skis. It's like, there's nothing wrong with the flippers. You just don't need them. You need skis. So get the skis and then you're happy.
Yes.
If that makes any sense
all
at all.
The skis. I love it. I love it. So that's what I wanted to
don't
say.
Don't buy flippers if you don't need them is my message. Yeah.
I literally have a pair of flippers that I used once. And then I was had an opportunity to use them a second time and I forgot them. That's the problem.
But you see that? This is what I'm talking terrible. About. I hope the flipper community doesn't hear this.
I hope you do.
Ah, well.
I think we covered it.
I believe so. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Hey, see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
1, 3, 2, 9, 7. 1, 3, 2, 9, 7. 6, 0, 3, 1, 8.